supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, for many of you, it may be time to plant a new lawn. The end of August, beginning of September, is lawn planting time for cool season grasses. But what if that lawn is surrounded by trees? And what if you live in an area that's warm enough for a warm season grass? We'll cover all those bases when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, we'll start hitting singles at 1-888-346-9499. Will, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how are you doing today, Mike?
I am doing just fine. Will, how are you, sir?
I'm doing about as fine as frog's fur.
Okay, very good. And where is Will as fine as a frog's fur?
Well, I'm here in Kennedy, New York.
So what can I do for Will up towards the top of Pennsylvania where it meets New York?
Well, me and the wife, we do a lot of composting. What I want to do is get a bunch of charcoal from my one friend and then infuse it with compost tea, kind of in vein of the Mayan super soil idea. And I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Well, ever since this biochar stuff started a couple years ago, I've been slowly researching it. And I'll tell you what I know about it.
Okay.
First, it's not just charcoal. The biochar that actually does seem to have some positive horticultural properties is not necessarily wood, but it is woody plant material. So it could be like heavy stalks or stems, things like corn stalks. Mm-hmm. But it has to be burned, I believe, very slowly, and I'm certain in a very low oxygen environment. If you make biochar the wrong way, it becomes carbon wrong as opposed to, you know, carbon good. You add to the stress on the environment rather than reduce it. The other thing, the Bartlett Tree Company that had me speak at their annual symposium at the Philadelphia Flower Show. During that symposium, they referred to biochar several times. And its ideal use is when you are preparing a big new planting area. For instance, okay, you couldn't use biochar on an existing lawn. You'd have to tear up the lawn. But if you were installing a new lawn to actually make sure you had real biochar and then bury it maybe like 6 inches deep throughout that subsoil, then spread more soil, then sow the lawn, we're led to believe that that would actually improve the health of the lawn. The Bartlett people have seen what they're saying are tremendous successes when they plant new groves of trees in areas that they have buried biochar throughout. But again, it's not really something you can do in an established garden. It's like the opposite of permaculture, or maybe the beginning of permaculture, because you have to do it at the beginning when you first prepare the soil for a massive planting. And what they found is this woody material, when it is burned at a very slow rate in low oxygen, gets all these different pores and openings on it, like activated charcoal does. But there is something about the way the material is made in that low oxygen environment that this becomes housing preferred by microorganisms. And they just move in like it was the new apartment building in the trendy new neighborhood. And the soil life just explodes. But again, it has to be buried and it has to be biochar made in a very specific manner to achieve these benefits.
Okay.
So you're talking about, for instance, taking maybe biochar and adding something to it. If you have really good compost tea, if you were going to start a new garden, a lawn, an orchard or something like that, and you had access to real biochar, you learned how to make it. You invested in the machinery to do the low oxygen and the air scrubbing to make sure you're not putting smoke in the air. Then I would say you would bury the biochar, and after that you would feed your plants with the compost tea.
Okay. Yeah, because that was one of my main questions, because I have a friend who burns his wood stove, and he's afraid to leave it burning, so he shuts it right down, and it makes this gorgeous-looking charcoal, small pieces, much like biochar. So I was wondering, you know, well, what would happen if you seep that stuff in compost tea, let it dry out, and then, like you said, bury it 6 inches deep. I wonder how that would help.
Because at the end, he's tamping it down. He's creating a low-oxygen environment. There may be some elements of biochar there. Certainly much more possibility than open burning outside.
Mm-hmm. And, that's what
and then you can try it. But one thing you have to remember is biochar is alkaline. All charcoal is alkaline. All wood ash is alkaline. So it's best used in a soil that's already a little too acidic, where you're going to grow plants that like a neutral pH, because biochar, like any kind of wood ash, will raise the pH, and you don't want to use it in an alkaline environment. All right, Will?
All right, well, thank you so much.
All right, give it a shot. If you run a test in a couple of pots, chart your progress and send us pictures.
I'll do that.
All right, good luck, sir.
All right, thank you, Mike.
1-888-346-9499. Rick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, thanks, Mike. My question is how to do with growing flowers in pots.
And where is Rick?
Downingtown, PA.
Okay. Basically, my line is you don't want to use any garden soil. You want to fill them with a nice mix of soil-free mix, perlite, and compost. Make sure they got good drainage, and over the course of the summer, you can pretty much grow any plant in a pot you could grow in the ground.
My follow-up question is this. So each year after the growing season, you have these pots that need attending to. My experience has been if I leave them on the deck, they'll freeze and break. And if I don't empty them and take the dirt back down and do all this work and lifting, I'm sure they're going to have to buy more new pots the following year. So I'm wondering what you would recommend that would hold up through the winter, or how to go about doing it so that they don't crack. Obviously, some of them are very expensive, you know.
Right. So were you growing in terracotta or ceramic?
I was growing in some synthetic and a couple of, I guess they're terracotta. If you clay, they look like clay.
Right. What do you mean by synthetic? Do you mean plastic?
Well, just plastic.
Oh, okay. In terms of descending order, terracotta, people should realize that even though it has this great look to it, terracotta originally comes from parts of the world that don't freeze in the winter. So that should be a dead giveaway. Terracotta or these ceramic pots, if they have soil left in them over the winter, the soil's going to get wet, it's going to freeze, it's going to expand. Those pots are the first to go. So if you're going to continue with terracotta, which people love the look of, you definitely want to get a big rolling trash can or something, empty the soil out of them, carefully stack the pots. You can put layers of newspaper between the pots. That way you only need one pile if all the pots are approximately the same size.
And, okay.
Well, no, that's not.
I was hoping you'd save me all that work, Mike.
Okay, well, now. Plastic, the heavier the plastic, the firmer the plastic, the more expensive the plastic, the thicker the plastic, the more resistant that will be to cracking. It would probably be good if you could do it simply to, once the pots dry out at a point before we get freezing weather, to then cover them. So the soil inside does not get saturated, and then it won't expand as much. And the combination of keeping that soil somewhat dry with just a simple cover over the pot and the heavy-duty plastic itself should allow you to keep the soil in the pots. I will tell you that in my landscape, what stays out and actually has plants growing in it all winter long are these half whiskey barrels.
Yes.
Well, they are the bee's freaking knees. There's so much room in these things. They look so good. They are close to indestructible, and they are not bothered by the freeze-thaw cycle.
All right, so wooden containers will do what I want without cracking, and I can also leave them out and just save myself that time and effort the following season. When I also learned that I can refresh that soil with peat moss and some lime, is that what, I think that's what you offered?
Yeah, well, peat moss is an integral component of any potting mix. It keeps things light. When you use peat moss alone for normal plants, you have to add a little bit of lime. But I tell you, to lighten up soil that's getting heavy in pots, there's nothing better than perlite, those little white popped mineral balls.
But as far as nutrients, doesn't it pretty much start to get exhausted of its nutrients?
There's no nutrients in peat moss.
Oh, well then.
To freshen up the nutrients, you would put 2 inches of compost on the top.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
All right, Rick.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your help.
Great questions,
man. I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'm coming to Dayton to do a special WYSO member event and then a big public event on Saturday, October 3rd. But don't go offering me a ride back to the airport just yet, because I'll be right back with a tale of three lawns and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, right now is the beginning of lawn planting time for everyone who wants to install a cool season grass like fescue, rye, or bluegrass. But what kind of grass should you use under trees, whether you're in a cool climate, a moderate climate, or a hot climate? We'll have some surprising suggestions after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Nancy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Nancy. How are you?
I'm good.
And where is Nancy good?
Marion, Pennsylvania.
Very good. What can we do for Nancy just outside of Philadelphia?
Well, I'm wondering if you have any solution for the horrible weed Pinellia.
Oh, I don't know if we can get rid of it, but I'd be happy to meet you in a bar and have a couple of drinks and curse it. And
you have it too?
I did. I made one of the stupidest mistakes in my stupidest life. I had what I thought appeared in my garden. Look, it's a little miniature Jack in the Pulpit.
Exactly, yeah.
It's got that beautiful cape, and then, oh, the little tongue that comes out is so much more dramatic than the one in the woods. It's kind of snaky, and it has that essence of, like, almost evil. And I was at a public appearance and described it, and a woman in the audience jumped up and said, "Get rid of it. Get rid of it now." And it was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm the expert here, lady." And the next year, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was also the year where I blew my shoulder out and had to have my rotator cuff repaired. So even though I had help, the help was mostly concentrated on keeping my peaches alive, getting everything planted, weeded, pruned. Matt helped me a lot to go after it, and we knocked it back quite a bit. So I'd say this year I have about a third as much, and now I'm starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, but are you digging down the six or seven inches you have to get that ball at the bottom?
I'm doing everything. First, some beds where I'm planning to plant garlic at the end of the season, I like covered them with six layers of cardboard that were around to see what would happen. And when I took the cardboard off to look the other day, the Pinellia weeds are like 8 feet long and ghostly white. But I can't think they had a good summer, if you know
right.
what I mean.
Yeah, I have tried everything. I even replaced a whole perennial garden. I dug out all the perennials and kept them out of the ground for a year and covered it with plastic. And it's not as bad.
Right. If you did that last year, we didn't have enough sun to solarize soil. Solarizing a bed is absolutely guaranteed to kill everything in it, but you can't freehand it. You have to level the soil perfectly. You have to saturate the soil completely till it can't hold water anymore. And then you have to stretch 3 mil clear plastic over top and really seal the edges. You can't just guess with black plastic or anything. There's tremendous research on this.
That's too bad.
And if you, right, if you had gone or if you choose to go to our website, You Bet Your Garden, under Garden Answers A to Z, under S for solarization, I condense all the research and tell people how to do it perfectly. But as you know, the problem with this weed is it has a very long, slender root.
Yeah.
And then down towards the end of the root is a little, like, potato thing off to the side. And it's kind of programmed that when you pull it, you'll get that long, slender root, but that little potato will stay in the ground.
And then come back.
Right, and then, like real potatoes, it'll grow. So you really have to dig up whole sections and get all those little potatoes out, you know.
Yeah. You're digging it all out?
You got to. You just got to work in quadrants. You got to pick one bed and say, this is it. No more for you here. And you work away at it. And it's my experience that you also have to look for those snakeheads. Once a snakehead comes up, you're in dire trouble.
Then,
then you want to go over and get that one.
No, I pull them up right as soon as I see them.
Even spraying with an organic herbicide like Iron X or vinegar, it really is not going to affect that little secondary bulb down at the bottom.
Yeah.
So they have to come out. So, but just keep at it. Do it in sections. Maybe get smart and hire some kids to come in for a day and really, really work it out. Really knock back 98% of it. Take your time. And a warning to others. If something pops up in your garden that looks like we're describing, a little baby Jack in the Pulpit that has a long snake-like tongue that comes out of the hood, get rid of it as soon as you see it and screen that soil, get those little potato jobbies out of there, or you will have a new hobby for the next 3 or 4 years.
That's true. Well, thanks, Mike.
All right, Nance. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Good luck to me.
Good luck to
your
all
program.
Of us. Oh, thank you so much.
Bye bye.
1-888-346-9499. Eric, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Good day, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine today. Eric, how are you, sir?
Great and getting better. Hey, I have chickens, and I compost their waste, and I use some of the municipality's compost, and I mix that together and let that rot for about a year, and I throw it in my tomato beds. Now, my problem is my tomatoes, which bear a lot of fruit, grow about 10, 11 feet tall, and I need to prune them back, and I'd like to get a little advice from you. What's the best way to do that without spreading any diseases or fungus or anything?
Where is chicken growing, Eric?
Right down the street from Valley Forge Military Academy.
Okay. That's in Wayne, PA?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you have chickens. You capture their waste in what kind of bedding?
Usually it's a straw or grass clippings. They're fine. I put the compost in their coop as well to mix it in and start the rotting process immediately.
Oh, I guess chickens would root around in the compost, wouldn't they? Looking for
yes,
bugs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so everything really does get mixed really well together. Then you let it sit for a year. So when you apply it, it's no longer hot.
Correct.
Because you realize that fresh chicken manure would either kill your plants or make them 100 feet tall and they would attack Tokyo.
Correct. That's what I'm worried about. And they get 11, 12 feet tall. And we've been cutting them and giving the cuttings to neighbors.
But you have to understand that you're cutting off the new growth that's going to give you all of your late season tomatoes.
But they're 6.5, 7 foot tall at that point.
Well, they're kind of supposed to be. How do you support them?
We use bamboo stakes.
Oh, okay. So you're just kind of freehanding it.
Correct.
This is why I recommend my tomato cages. Now, you're very familiar with animal fencing.
Oh, yeah.
Rabbit wire, turkey wire, not chicken wire because that's too flimsy, but welded wire animal fencing. Here's what you do. You cut a section into a 6-foot linear length, and then you form that into a tube. And then maybe with a couple of helpers, you get those bamboo stakes off of your tomatoes, undo some of the wrappings so the tomato isn't being forced to grow straight up.
Okay.
And then you center the cage around the tomatoes. And then you use the bamboo stakes driven through the sides of the cage to make sure the cage doesn't wobble. What will happen is the tomato, being a vine, will try to grow towards the sun, but being a vine can't grow straight up like a tree. So it'll lean against the side of the cage. It'll travel around the inside of the cage. And by the time that vine gets to the top of a 6-foot tall cage, it has used up 10, 11, 12 of its linear feet. Everything all inside the cage, nice and tidy. And then if it's still going to keep growing, it can spill over the top a little bit. Nothing will hit the ground. And you've got your tomatoes in this guaranteed 2-foot wide footprint that it's very easy to leave the airspace for in between. Now, I presume you've been tying the vine to a central stake.
Yes.
Which you should realize limits you to the size of the stake, not the size of the vine. And I can tell you're growing heirlooms, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Heirloom tomatoes, typically a healthy vine will be 10, 12, maybe even 14 feet long by the end of the season. And cutting off the tops will really cut your harvest because it's the new growth that's producing the later season tomatoes, which tend to be the best tasting ones. Try to unwrap the top couple of feet and then maybe even make one of these cages and just put it next to the stake so that the tomato can drop down into it. Anything like that that allows it to continue growing naturally. And then next year, plant inside these tomato cages because the only mistake you're making is forcing them to grow up straight and laterally. They really don't need to do that. It's easier for them if they curl around the inside of the cage and all the tomatoes are within reach. But I would not continue cutting off the tops of your plants. You're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
How about suckers and alternating leaders?
Oh, you mean pruning suckers?
Yes.
The person holding the pruning shears is the sucker. All plants only collect solar energy through their leaves. They funnel that solar energy to the fruit. Every leaf you remove takes energy away from the plant. It also exposes the fruits to the sun, which, as you probably know, is not good for them in a hot summer. The best heirloom tomatoes have a lot of leaf color and not as many tomatoes because they need to be protected from sun scald. Every leaf you have is energy supercharging the taste of your developing tomatoes.
Well, I appreciate your time.
All right, Eric. Good luck, sir.
You have a good summer.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Arthur, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. Art, how are you doing, sir?
Can't complain today. If I could ask you a quick question. I live in an over 55 community in Ocean County, New Jersey. We have a great deal of pride in our landscaping and our lawns, but we have a growing nut sedge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we're advised to treat it chemically and that the process will take several years to complete. One of our biggest concerns is that we're very close to Barnegat Bay, and we just would like to know if this treatment would be at risk to the environment.
Oh, heck yes. Deadly. And it probably would not knock back the nutsedge. Nutsedge is a weed of cultural problems. In other words, before anybody just starts spraying herbicides randomly around, you have to try to change the conditions that favor the growth. Because this thing reproduces by seed. It spreads by underground rhizomes. And as you probably have seen, right under the ground, there's little tubers that are the size of popcorn kernels.
Right.
Those are the nuts of nutsedge. And the rhizomes and the nuts both store food. So herbicides are very limited effectiveness. But when you have sedge in a lawn, and this is an ancient practice of organic gardening and farming, every weed is telling you something. There used to be, back in the 70s, very popular gardening books that would allow you to identify what was going wrong in your lawn or garden by the specific weeds that were growing there. The first thing that these sedges need is poor drainage. And a lot of these big landscapes were sown on pitifully poor clay soil and then have heavy machinery going over them all the time. So the nutsedge is, first of all, a sign that your soil is highly compacted. And rather than spray herbicides, what you want is to have the ground's core aerated. As soon as the summer heat stress is over, you can begin a program of core aeration. And that's pulling little plugs out of the lawn to relieve the soil compaction. Then the resulting loose soil favors the grass and the nutsedge doesn't like it. The nutsedge is also telling me they're feeding your lawns much too often. A lot of times people who have these landscaping contracts overfeed the lawns to up the ante, to up the number of payments. But in New Jersey, your lawns should only be fed once in the spring and once in the fall. Now, it's hard to get landscapers to agree to this because they want to spread more than that. They want to get paid to do more than that. But the lawn fertilizers themselves are a great threat to your local waterways, especially if your guys are using fertilizers with phosphorus in it. You may have heard on the show that the states of Maryland and Virginia have totally banned the use of lawn fertilizers with phosphorus. They've limited the percentage of nitrogen, and they have real strict rules about how often and what time of year the lawns can be fed. And this is all in a desperate attempt to save the Chesapeake Bay. So you're in exactly the same situation. And the third thing is too much water. That goes along with the core aeration. Do they have a sprinkler system on these lawns?
On the common grounds, there's sprinklers, and then each house controls its own water sprinkler.
Okay. Because especially in the wet summers we've been having last year, the Pennsylvania, New Jersey area got 52 inches of rain. This year, we're right on schedule to have exactly the same. People should not be watering. Watering favors the nutsedge. If these lawns are aerated, the feeding is cut back, they're allowed to dry out between waterings, and they're cut at 3 inches as opposed to probably a way too low cut right now, I can virtually guarantee that the nutsedge will begin to reverse itself. Because grass is a bully if it's given the right conditions. But if it's not, weeds are going to take advantage of those poor conditions.
That is terrific advice. I appreciate it, and thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, sir. Fight the good fight.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear on Saturday, September 5th at the Lee Highway Nursery in Warrenton, Virginia. On Friday evening, September 11th, at the Spring City Library in Chester County, and at the Horsham Township Library on Wednesday evening, September 16th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with a tale of three different lawns and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to a tale of three different lawns, all of which are threatened by trees. What kind of grass should they try? Will any grass grow there? What are the limiting factors, and when should you do it? We will answer all of those important questions after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Vlad, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing today?
I am just ducky today, Vlad. How are you, sir?
Fabulous, fabulous.
And where is Vlad Fabulous?
We are in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
What can we do for Vlad in Pennsylvania?
We bought a place, and on our yard, we have bamboo growing. And from what I understand, the stuff spreads. And
very much.
So we're just trying to eliminate it or just not spread it anymore. Just any advice that you can provide for us.
Where is it in relation to the house?
It's actually at the end of the house, the end of the yard towards the road, which is great. You almost work like a fence.
Right.
But I don't want to go towards the yard much more. Some of them would be coming towards, you know, the grass.
Oh, Vlad, yeah. Bamboo will come into your house. Old abandoned homes that have running bamboo planted around them. Eventually, the bamboo literally comes up through the floorboards and demolishes the house. I've had it come up through compost bins. It's just amazing. I have a situation where I have a grove of bamboo on the other side of a stream from my house. And again, no one who's alive today planted it, but it would be relentless except for the fact there's a stream on one side, a rock wall behind it, a road on the other side. And then, believe it or not, my neighbor Willard is actually able to keep it under control just through relentless mowing. But he's a Pennsylvania Dutchman, and they have superpowers. I wouldn't recommend that. Now, you say there's a road on one side, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's ideal. It won't be able to cross the road. And you like the idea of it being there as like a privacy screen.
Exactly. I don't mind that at all.
The smartest thing to do is a one-time expense. You hire a landscaper who knows how to do this. You have to make sure they have the right tools and expertise because you want them to dig a trench on your side of the bamboo and install what's called rhizome barrier. You know, all those different bamboo plants you have?
Yeah.
That's one plant, all growing out of one giant underground rhizome. So what you do is you dig a trench and you install this material that stops the rhizomes from moving any further in that direction, then the bamboo will continue to thrive inside kind of that container, but it won't come into your lawn and it won't threaten your house.
And,
and there is a great website for information on this. It's called AmericanBamboo.org. They have all these technical papers about how the barrier is to be installed. They may be able to refer you to landscapers who have the material and have used it before. And you can try to do what Willard is doing with the constant mowing. Were it myself, I would spend the money, get that barrier put in, and just stop worrying about it.
Okay, wonderful. I really appreciate it.
It's a very common problem in our area, Vlad. Good luck with it.
Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Arlena, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Arlena. How are you?
I'm doing well, except I'm a little upset about my tree.
Okay, and where is Arlena upset?
Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia. What's wrong with your poor trees?
Well, it was really doing great. It's a ornamental cherry, and it's about 10 years old. But at some point during the winter, Pico came to move meters to the outside, and they had to dig a hole not too far from it, so it definitely interfered with some root. Didn't seem like a whole bunch of root, but then they dug another hole horizontal underneath the ground, so I can't, with like one of these air pumps or things, you can't see what they're actually hitting when they're under the ground. All I know is that this spring, about half the leaves that normally come on came on, and we had a very wet spring, so it was doing okay, and then we had a very hot day with no rain, and the leaves started closing up, so we got the hose out there, and we have been, the last 3 days, pretty much watering it all day long, just very, very slow drips, and that's helping. But I would say of maybe half the leaves at this point that are on there are dead. So maybe a quarter of the leaves that it should have are still alive.
Okay, let's back up. So they dug holes near your tree over the winter.
Right.
And is your electrical service going underground or what? What were they doing?
No, this was gas. a gas line they were moving, I guess, so that they could hook the meter up outside.
Oh, so this was to, like, move a meter around.
Yes.
Was it in a lawn? Did they damage anything else?
Minimally. It wasn't a huge hole, and so they came back and reseeded it, so the lawn is fine.
Really? And they actually matched the seed and everything?
Oh, who knows if they matched it, but, well, my lawn is such a mixture of all sorts of stuff.
Oh, okay. You know? So they dug holes, they pulled up your lawn, they clearly went too close to the roots of the tree.
Right.
And they didn't have an arborist there trying to help them avoid root damage.
Right.
Now, at the end of winter, things did suddenly turn very hot and dry for an extended period. We had like 3 weeks without rain that was shockingly hot at the very beginning of spring. Is that when this thing started to falter?
Well, you know, it blooms first, really, before the leaves come out.
Mm-hmm.
And there were probably fewer blooms on it. But it seemed to be doing okay, except there probably wasn't quite as full of blooms. When we really noticed was when the leaves opened up, it just wasn't like it was the year before. It was sparse. It was, like I said, about half the leaves. But it was evenly kind of spaced. It was definitely more leaves up till now.
Okay. Is this tree mulched?
No.
And is it growing out of a lawn?
It is, but it's never had a problem. It's done beautifully up until now.
Right. And did you feed it anything to try?
Nope. I know better than that because I listen to you all the time.
Okay, very good. But the lawn grows right up to the trunk of this cherry.
Almost.
So two things you want to do. First, you want to contact the utility and tell them you want to register a complaint, you want to register this damage. You're going to try to nurse the tree back to health, but clearly they severed the roots and they are liable for a replacement. I think they'll be very amenable to that. But how tall, how old is this tree?
It's about 10 years old. So now it's probably a little taller than the house, which is a two-story house.
Oh, okay. So it really can't be easily replaced.
No.
But I will tell you, if the tree dies, to hold them responsible and to make sure that they replace it with the biggest possible tree. And obviously that you would supervise the planting of that. For now, what I want you to do is just get out there with a sharp hoe and hoe the grass away in a circle around the tree. Try to create an island of no grass under the tree that goes as far out as the farthest branch of the tree.
Okay.
And then over top of that now dirt area, I want you to put down a nice inch of compost. Not touching the trunk, but going out as far as the furthest branch. That is really your best shot at rejuvenating it. And if we do have another dry spell, yes, feel free to water it during dry spells. Don't go too nuts with the watering. And then we'll know next spring what the story is. But you want to register your complaint now that, you know, this tree was doing great for 10 years, they dug holes near it, and now it's failing, and you want to get in line for a replacement if it doesn't recover.
Okay. Even if it loses all of its leaves at some point this summer, do we still have a chance that it'll come back in the spring?
If it leafed out enough early in the season, and if those leaves stayed on long enough. A lot of times these past years, we've had a lot of summer heat stress where a lot of trees have dropped their leaves in August. Perfectly fine because they had already done all the photosynthesis they needed to have a good following year.
Okay.
But the most important thing is get rid of some of the competition from the grass, put down a nice mulch of compost. And yes, if we go through another searing heat wave, you can water deeply.
Okay, that's great.
All right, good luck.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Enjoy your show. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it is time for the question of the week. Another of our famous triple headers. This one called Growing Grass Near Trees, the North and South of It. Alexis Landis, get us started by reading the first of this week's triumvirate, please.
Sure, Mike. Tim in Hendersonville, Tennessee writes, "My lawn was once immaculate, but then my wife and I planted several trees without understanding the damage the shade would do to the lawn. I now have more dirt and weeds than grass. And the grass keeps dying. I'm in the process of getting dirt delivered and having it spread, leveled, and tapered for the natural flow of rainfall. My worry is how to keep the grass healthy with limited sun after all that prep work.
Well, if this, quote, dirt is already delivered, it looks like our listener has already chosen to go with a cool season grass, whose ideal planting time is mid-August through mid-September. Although you could stretch it into late September where they are, just outside of Nashville. But if that dirt hasn't been delivered yet, I suggest they take a break and go look at it first. You really want to inspect bulk material like that before you buy it. You ideally want it to be compost or a high-quality screen topsoil that's rich and black in color when it's dry.
And then plant fine fescue, right? The most shade-tolerant of the cool-season grasses.
Well, it's actually a family of grasses, but yeah, a fine fescue mix would be ideal if the area gets at least 4 hours of sun a day, and if he's willing to water a lot during dry spells.
Now, wait a minute. I thought you always said that shade-loving grasses don't use a lot of water because they're not broiling in the sun.
That is correct. But in this case, we have big bullies nearby whose roots are going to suck up all the water they can before any gets to the grass. People tend to realize the problems that are going to be caused by the shade, but they often fail to recognize that trees are also real water hogs. In fact, in situations like this, a lawn will often survive the lack of sun, but lose the battle for water.
Okay, well, we move on to Helen in Oklahoma City, who writes, "A landscape company is attempting to sell my elderly neighbor fescue. She has a lawn almost identical to ours facing west, but because of the tree canopy, some areas only get about an hour of sun a day in the summer, and our Bermuda grass is slowly dying. Will fescue survive after the trees leaf out?"
Well, again, we're going to have the same water issue here. Although the state sometimes has to endure biblical floods, Oklahoma can be mercilessly dry. And their legendary wind that comes whipping down the plains makes things much worse. It's constantly sucking moisture out of all the plants there. But no matter what, I can say with confidence that Bermuda was the wrong grass choice here.
Why is that?
Bermuda is a full sun grass. It does really poorly in shade. It's also a very thirsty grass.
So a double whammy under big trees. What do you think of the fescue idea, though?
Well, Oklahoma City is in the transition zone, where you have to roll the dice and choose a cool season or warm season grass, knowing that neither one is going to look really good year-round. If she can keep it well-watered, a blend of cool season fescues might not mind the lack of sun. And a fescue lawn would be seeded sometime over the next month. The most shade-tolerant warm season grass is St. Augustine. It would perform much better than Bermuda, and like all warm season grasses, would be installed in the spring.
And finally, Howard in the New Jersey Pinelands writes, "Back in May, I had a new lawn installed by a local landscaper. The prior lawn, weeds, ivy, and some daylilies that were relocated, was turned over and topsoil added, then graded, fertilized, and seeded, primarily a fescue mix due to all the trees and accompanying shade. I have good grass growing on about 75% of the area, but weeds and crabgrass on the remainder. What's the best way to deal with this? I suspect that the landscaper will recommend a commercial weed and feed product in several weeks, but I'd prefer an organic alternative."
Well, we really have to thank Howard for this perfect opportunity to remind our listeners that the organic weed and feed, corn gluten meal, prevents as many kinds of weeds when it's applied in mid-August as it does when it's put down in the spring.
That's right. I remember your surprise when your lawn care guy, Dr. Nick Christians from Iowa State, told you that and added that he had been trying to tell you for years.
Hey, I'm Irish. Third time's the charm. Anyway, to quote Nick, many broadleaf weed seeds germinate right after the summer heat stress period is over. Dandelion, clover, and plantain are the main ones. Then the winter annuals like henbit and common chickweed usually germinate a little later. So an early fall feeding with corn gluten meal is a great start at preventing weeds next year.
Then you'd put down more corn gluten just as the forsythia and red buds start blooming in the spring to stop new crabgrass from sprouting.
Right. Then you just cut a little bit higher, 3.5 inches instead of 3, to compensate for the shade, and we should be off to the races here. Well, that sure was some good advice about planting turf near trees, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to cut me too short if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore, as long as you include your location, at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, but where you will find the answers to all of your garden questions, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our popular podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz keeps our website up and running, mostly, except for those times with the podcast. The already short Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Too Tall Al Banks is our editor. Made in the Shade is our indomitable intern, Stephen Drehobel. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'm going to light a candle to St. Augustine right now, who is, by the way, the patron saint of brewers, printers, and theologians, and the saint you petition for the alleviation of sore eyes. He's also credited with developing the concept of original sin, which may explain why they named the lawn grass after him. I'll tell you what, I'll take the brewers in 5 with a side bet on the printers and rest my sore eyes until I can see you again next week. What can you expect to hear next week? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I have no idea what we're going to do, only that it will be fun and that I will get into trouble. Plus your fabulous phone calls.